Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. We've all heard the phrase, the strong black woman. Some have seen it as a compliment, others a burden, or even a flag to fly through the battle of life. Acclaimed author Marita Golden has other thoughts about it in her new book, The Strong Black Woman, How a Myth Endangers the Physical and Mental Health of Black Women. Well, she joins me tonight, along with psychotherapist and relationship expert Dr. Audrey Chapman, to talk about that. And I want to hear from you, our listeners, tonight about this very issue during this Medical Monday conversation. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I invite you to tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Marita Golden, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you, Harold, for having me.
Absolutely. Dr. Chapman, how are you?
I am fine. How are you?
It is so good to talk to you. It has been a minute.
It has been a minute, yes, but it's been good.
Yes, indeed. Good to hear your voice. So, Marita, let's get to this. Some of us are old enough to remember, and even you hear it today, a lot of women still say, yes, I'm a strong black woman, and they wear that thing like an S on their chest, that superwoman thing. Mm-hmm. But you're suggesting that that's not necessarily a good thing.
Well, you know, the strong black woman complex ideology, whatever you want to call it, is deeply, deeply embedded in our culture. Mm-hmm. And for generations, it's been an adaptation first to slavery, then to legal segregation. And like many oppressed groups, particularly African descent oppressed groups, our women, you know, became the backbone of the culture, of the family, of the community. But now we're in a very different time where we can do as women what our grandmothers and our mothers could not do, and that is step back and look at the very, very high price that we pay emotionally and physically to put our needs on hold while we sacrifice over and over again for the health of community and family.
Give me an example, if you could.
Very often in black communities, for example, black women are the people. Every family, for example, has a black woman in the family who's the matriarch. And Dr. Chapman, we were talking about a week ago, and she said brilliantly, black women are the most neglected women in America. We are asked to do a lot, but our families very often don't ask, what do we need? So we're so used to black women being single parents, black women saving democracy, black women voting more than anybody else, black women juggling everything, that
black women running the office.
Exactly. That black women themselves are completely separated from how much they do. So that's, you know, we all know, we know those black women who we go to answer every problem. And when they don't want to answer that problem, we give them pushback.
So, Dr. Chapman, we have also seen a huge movement over this thing called self-care. And if you look at social media, no matter what age you happen to be, what generation, that can be defined in many ways. Do you believe that self-care is contributing to a movement for better health, or is it really deeper than the mani-pedi self-care movement?
Yeah, no, I think the self-care movement is beginning to have an effect. We saw the two athletes, Simone Biles,
yes,
and Naomi Osaka. Both of them took a break because they said that they were exhausted and they needed to have a little time off while they were involved in competition with the Olympics. And we know that if we don't rest, if there's something called limbic system, it starts to produce anxiety, stress, which then leads to back pain, headaches, depression, mood swings, not to mention that black women are three times as likely to have heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. So it's important to think about self-care. I call it giving balance because I like for women to be in relationships where there's balance, whether there's a man there or not. Even with the children, you know, you give balance. You teach them how to pitch in and wash clothes and take care of their, you know, clean up their room and do stuff like that so that it all doesn't fall on the woman.
Mm. I'm glad that Dr. Chapman, you know, mentioned the whole issue of black women's health because there's a couple of things going on. The strong black woman belief says that we're so strong that when our bodies are telling us we need to go to the doctor, we can ignore that. And so we as black women are victims, like all black people, of systemic racism, macro, micro, 24/7. We know that systemic racism is a stressor inside our bodies that makes it more difficult for us to heal when we're sick, for us to lose weight, for us to maintain good health. So if we're women who are putting on the back burner our mental health, our physical health, we are actually co-conspiring with systemic racism to remain unhealthy. So that self-care is mani-pedis, but it's also going to the therapist when you need to. And more black women are recognizing that, and they're not willing to pay the really high cost of
and
this.
I want to add another piece to Marita, which is that at least with a lot of women that I know, both friends and family and the women that I work with as clients, they feel guilty about self-care. When I start talking to them about self-care, they feel guilty. They feel like it means that they're selfish. That's the first mm-hmm. word that they usually say. Oh, I don't want to be selfish. I wasn't raised to be selfish, or I wasn't taught in the black community or the church to be selfish. And so they automatically don't think of it as self-care, which is very different. Self-care has to do with a balance of your physical life, your mental life, your social, emotional life, and your spiritual life. You have to, yeah, all of that has to be in balance.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is our Medical Monday conversation, and we are talking about black women and taking care of themselves, not just the physical, but the mental. I am talking to acclaimed author Marita Golden, as well as psychotherapist and relationship expert Dr. Audrey Chapman. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You know, something just struck me. I remember years and years ago, my father gave me some really great advice, which I've never forgotten, and I think this is really applicable to this, even though it was a man-to-man conversation. And I was kind of talking about feeling the pressure of community service when I was in television. And my father said to me, "Son, you cannot give to the community if you don't take care of yourself."
Absolutely.
And it just seems to me that that is the message for this conversation, but certainly for the women and the guilt piece, Marita. And you have women who have, black women, who have traditionally been the caretakers of the community within their homes, the communities within their immediate communities, the communities within the broader black communities. And yet we do see that even some of the high profile black female leaders in our community still not taking care of themselves. What do they need to do just that?
Well, for example, when I was doing research on the book, I researched, some of our iconic sheroes like Fannie Lou Hamer and Rosa Parks, et cetera. And for example, Rosa Parks did yoga. Rosa Parks meditated. And what I discovered was that there is a tradition among black women who are very, very active in the community and who are change makers. of actively engaging in mental health care. But what we're really talking about is a conversation that really has to start in the home. For example, my husband's niece recently lost her stepfather. She's 10 years old. And when I asked her to talk about her feelings, and I said, I'm sure you've cried a lot, she said, Aunt Marita, I haven't cried. I'm holding it in. Now, she's 10 years old, and already she's a strong black woman. Somewhere, somehow, she's gotten the message that she cannot express her deepest feelings. And so that's if that is not changed through conversations with the people who love her and care about her, she will grow up to be someone who has mental health issues and doesn't really know how to get mentally healthy. And so we have a tradition of, for example, I thought it was very interesting that Stacey Abrams, when she was running, for governor of Georgia, I was researching online, and she talked about her weight, for example. She talked, one, about the fact that her handlers were pressuring her, lose weight, lose weight, lose weight. But she talked about how she'd been struggling with weight all of her life, but she said she had this weight problem because of emotional issues in her childhood. And I thought that was so brave of her to publicly say, I am struggling with obesity because I was emotionally wounded as a child. For a woman like her to say that is absolutely huge. And we're going to hear more of that.
There's a quote, it's not what you're eating, it's what's eating you.
Mm-hmm.
And basically what it means is whatever is eating you up inside, you know, whatever is tearing you up inside that you don't feel that you can just release. You don't have to release it to the public. You can release it in the privacy of your own home. But to hold it and for some black women, they've been holding stuff in for years. And it's not just related to what's going on out in the society. It's also related to relationship stuff. I mean, you know, my area, a lot of pain and a lot of anger and a lot of shame and guilt because of not being partnered or not having relationships that last very long, feeling a sense of emptiness and loneliness. So that all of that contributes to overeating. Or trying to sublimate is what we call it in my business. You try to substitute and do feel-good things. So over shopping, over drinking, over eating, all of those things, and overworking, all of those things occur because women are trying to fill the emptiness in the space that's there.
I do want to talk about that specific issue, but I've got to get to the phones. We have a lot of...
Oh, wonderful.
I've got a lot of phone calls, but
I don't want to forget. That's what we want.
Right, but I don't want to forget about that weight issue because there is a point I think that needs to be addressed. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Debbie, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Debbie. What's on your mind?
I'm one of the ones that, Ms. Abrams, I believe, just said, one of the ones dealing with the issue of health care. I have dental issues, and dental work is expensive, and it's affecting my health. I'm losing my sight. I have to have cataract surgery to the point where it's actually changing every couple of months. They won't do the surgery until I have the dental work done. And it's expensive. So I called my doctor because I have inflammation. And I said, I'm one of the ones, I've worked in healthcare. I know my body. I try to do holistic stuff. I have sciatica. I have a lot of things going on, plus depression and anxiety. I can't get any doctor that will see me because I don't have the extra insurance. I have Medicare. I'm 65. I live by myself. 95% of my time is spent by myself. And my dental issue is affecting my health to the point where it's making me sick. Mm. I call the doctors. They only want to see me during televisions.
Yeah. So, Debbie, I've got a lot of calls. I want to see if Dr. Chapman can at least... step in and kind of give you a suggestion, unless you have a quick question.
Well, I basically wanted to see if there was some direction that I could go, because right now I'm at odds ends, and each day I'm getting sick.
Dr. Chapman.
Yeah, I'm not understanding why Medicare is not providing you with these services, because that should be a part of the deal. But I do believe that there are programs at Health and Human Services in Rockville.
Well, I live in Maryland. I'm actually in Annapolis, and I've tried everything. I just relocated back here from Ohio.
Well, I'll tell you what, so that we don't take more time with the show, if you leave your number with the station, I will call you and I will give you the number at Health and Human Services that can probably give you the best lead.
Okay, Debbie, don't hang up. The producer will get your information and Dr. Chapman will then contact you. So don't hang up. The producer will get the information, okay? Thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about the myth of the strong Black woman and the impact that it has on the health of Black women, not just their physical health, but we're also talking about their mental health. Of course, my guests are acclaimed author Marita Golden. She has a new book out. And also we're talking with psychotherapist and relationship expert Dr. Audrey Chapman. Lines are still open. They're going to be open until 8 o'clock as always. So please, if you're having difficulty getting through, I promise I will take your phone call. Keep trying. Also, Emmanuel calling from Rockville. We're going to talk to you next. So please do not hang up. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Please do not forget to download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone. You will be able to hear the program live in its entirety. So stay with us. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. This conversation will continue in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. I am Harold Fisher. Today we are talking about the strong Black woman, the myth, and the impact that it has on the health and the welfare of Black women, not just their physical health, but their mental and emotional health. My guests are Marita Golden, the acclaimed author and psychotherapist and relationship author, Dr. Audrey Chapman. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Emmanuel calling from Rockville. Thanks for calling, Emmanuel. What's on your mind?
Thanks for having me, and it's a great show.
Thank you.
The question I have is, how can the Black man help, I'm talking about husband, boyfriend, father, brother, help the Black woman or encourage her to do self-help? I mean, to do self-awareness and, you know, to take care of herself more. I mean, because even in my life with my wife, I always try to encourage her to take time out for herself, to go do the little things that she wants to do. But just like the young lady said a few minutes ago, they feel guilty. And I try to tell her she has nothing to feel guilty about because our children are grown and gone.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so how can we, you know, just encourage them to, you know, really take care of themselves?
I think that's a great thank you, because my book, The Strong Black Woman, is a book for Black women, but it's also a book for the Black men who love them. And the third thing I'm going to say is buy my book and read it with your wife. Secondly, I'm going to say keep doing what you are doing. And one of the things that I do in the book is I profile women, Black women, who are talking about having gone into therapy, having gone into counseling. They tell really moving, deep stories about healing. And so that a lot of times when women are talking about self-care, they may feel guilty, but they also may feel afraid. And one of the things that the book does is it makes it that it's safe to think and talk about that. But I'm so glad to hear that. Thanks for what you're doing.
Yeah. And I would say, before I let you go, Emmanuel, you know, as a Black man myself, I think it's really simple. I just really think Black men need to just slow down and be more considerate sometimes.
I agree.
I mean, it's that simple. Just pay attention and listen to your woman, your sister, your mothers, your bonus moms, all of those things. You know, watch when they walk and if they wince or sigh or yes. all of and just say, babe, honey, mom, you know, big mom, whatever you call them. Let me take that for you.
Oh. That's part of being loving. You know, I talk all the time with couples that I work with. They say the word, I love you, all the time to the other person. But being loving is an action. Mm-hmm. It's what you do for each other. That's the act of being loving. And so that's what you're demonstrating, sir, that you are acting in a loving way toward your wife. And that's what people have to understand, the difference between just saying the word versus taking the action and being a little bit more tuned in, a little bit more aware, and acting in loving ways.
I think the other thing you could do is engage and enlist some of her friends, some of her good girlfriends, to talk the same talk that you're talking to her, so that she's getting that message of self-love and that it's okay to take care of herself from just because she's surrounded by it.
Yeah. Emmanuel, thank you so much for your phone call. Before I go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810, I want to get back to the point that I was making before the break. And we were talking about health, and we were talking about women and black women and their weight. Mm-hmm. And this is, and I'd like for both of you to react to this, please. And I'll start with Marita. You talk about black women and being overweight, and yet how do you balance that? And we go back to the Star Jones situation many, many years ago when she was on television and she was overweight, and she used to talk about she was fine with her weight until it came out that she wasn't. And we have this very, very venomous culture about, on one hand, the fat shaming. Okay, and this is particularly the case when you talk about black women, and then you have black women who talk about they are thick and they like being thick. And yet you may have doctors, black doctors, culturally competent doctors who say thick ain't it. How do you address that?
Culturally, we have a different concept of beauty. Culturally, we have a different concept of body. Thickness. Our bodies are not like white women's bodies. We hold fat differently. We gain weight differently. And yes, we do have different concepts of how to be big and healthy. The chapter I write called The Things We Carry, in which I write about weight and obesity, was the most difficult chapter to write. And I made sure that I had women of all sizes read that chapter. Because I think it's important to acknowledge that, yes, you can be big and healthy. But has your doctor told you that you're big and healthy? Or are you just saying that you're big and healthy? And I think that this issue of weight is really very important to talk about with compassion, but actually talk about it with honesty at the same time. And I think we can actually do that. So I'm just saying, has your doctor told you that you are big and healthy? One of my dear friends who just wrote a great book called Leaving Large, lost in her lifetime 700 pounds through yo-yo dieting, up and down, up and down. And I asked her at one point, well, you know, were you ever pre-diabetic? Did you ever have, you know, high blood pressure? She said, no, I'd go to my doctor and I was fine. And then all of a sudden, all of it happened.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, she was not diabetic. She was not high cholesterol until she was, and it all came down at the same time.
She probably reached a certain age, and that's when it starts to come down on you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But, Marita, I want to also just throw something out. I know I'm going to throw a monkey wrench into this conversation.
Throw the wrench, Doc. Throw the wrench.
But we have to talk about some of the hip-hop celebrities such as Lizzo, is
exactly.
that her name?
Who
are celebrating full-figured shaped bodies. I mean, she's saying it's okay, and she, you know, will sing her songs and shake her hips at the camera, and some women have said it's given them permission to not feel bad about their weight. So we have this other message, too, that I think has to be somehow addressed, because it's not healthy.
Well, that was my point. And Marita was talking about images of beauty compared to white women. I didn't say anything about white women. I didn't say anything about white women. I'm just talking about images of beauty, number one, versus health.
Right.
I think there's the rub.
Within the parameters of white women, whether we know it or not. Whether we acknowledge it or not. But go ahead, I interrupted you.
No, yeah. That's okay. Yeah. You're not going to get me into that one.
Yeah.
Let me
go.
I'm going to talk about white women on the show right now. Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. TT, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
So is it me?
Yes, ma'am. Go right ahead, please.
Yes, I just recently found out that I was given a drink by a family member that was laced with marijuana. And I am cognitively making a decision that when I feel like I've been wrong, to confront the individual that has done the wrong. Sorry, in an effort for them to make it right. And in this situation, instead of the person acknowledging that they were wrong for what they've done, they want to make it like I'm making a big deal out of nothing. And it's wrong that someone would give me a drink laced with marijuana without my knowledge.
Hmm. It's not only wrong, it's I would think on some level it's unethical and illegal.
Maybe illegal.
Yes,
right. It is illegal. It's considered a felony as a matter
of fact. Right. So I think that you really have a situation here, but the other thing is that what this person clearly does not care about your safety or your well-being, that they would do that in the first place.
Right.
So I also think you need to make some decisions. You may want to make a formal decision, like looking into the legality of it, but I think you need to make an emotional decision about the fact that you may not want to associate with someone who doesn't care about your well-being and will put you at risk like that.
Were you harmed in any way?
So, no, I just recently found out. But the job that I have, I work with children with severe mental health issues and behavioral issues. And there are times when at my job we have to be randomly tested for drug use.
Mm-hmm.
I would have failed the test and would have sworn upside down that the test was fake because I had no idea that I had been given anything that was laced.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I think about it, I actually have PTSD, and that came out with therapy, and doing a better job of taking...
You're in therapy now dealing with all of this?
Correct. Trying to do what I have to do to get better. And part of it is being able to stand up for myself when I feel like I'm being wrong.
Right.
But historically, when I do that, it's not received well, such as this case, and I feel like, okay, here I am again.
But even if it's not received well, you don't stand up for yourself and take care of yourself because you want everybody to celebrate.
Mm-hmm.
Some people aren't going to be happy about that. You've got to do it because it's your responsibility to take care of you and to make sure you're healthy and safe. You're not doing this because you're trying to get any kind of accolades from other people at all. This is because you are responsible as a full-grown adult to take care of you and to love you and to respect you. And it doesn't, you know, if other people have an attitude about that, then that tells you where they are with you. And that's what I was saying earlier. Then you have to make a decision about whether you're going to associate with someone like that. And that maybe is something you work on in therapy, how to make that separation, you know, how to take that break. Because this person is not good for you.
Absolutely. I completely agree. I mean, it's I mean, that's somebody. Somebody tried to drug you, or they did drug you.
They didn't try to.
They drugged you.
They put her at risk.
Right, and exactly.
That's what I'm saying. And there's not anything she can do about that, but there's something she can do about how she takes care of herself and moves forth in a way that is going to be healthy for her from this day forth.
Yeah.
When I say my heart hurts so bad because when you're dealing with strangers, you expect crazy like that.
Right.
You do not expect that when you're dealing with someone that says they
love
you.
That you know.
Yeah.
Well, you were violated. You were violated.
And that's exactly the word I use.
Yeah.
And you were. And that's what led to your PTSD. And I'm glad you're working on that. That's the other thing that you need to do so that you can release yourself of it. But you're not at fault here at all. The other person is.
Yeah, you didn't have...
You're doing everything right.
Absolutely.
You're in D.C. You're in D.C. where, you know, recreational marijuana is legal, but you did not give them permission to do this, and that's where the problem lies. It could have been alcohol, and you may not be a drinker, and if somebody slips alcohol in your drink, it's the same thing.
Right.
So,
well, I actually thought it was alcohol in the drink. I had no way of knowing that it was.
It could have been aspirin if you didn't give them permission.
Don't blame yourself because that's what typically women do too. They blame themselves for something negative that's taken place in the relationship. This was not your fault at all. You had no way of knowing. You trusted the person. They took advantage of your trust, and now you have to take the steps to take care of yourself and to work this out and work this through in therapy so that you can be healthy.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate you all so much.
TT, take care of yourself. Mm-hmm. So I have one question for both of you. This is a question for you, Dr. Chapman, from a clinical perspective. But for you, Marita, from an emotional perspective, an intellectual perspective, non-clinical. So I'll start with you, Marita. How do you know when you need to go talk to a therapist?
You know, it's interesting that you should ask that because in presentations around the book, I've found that many women have a mind-body disconnect. And their bodies will be telling them, I'm in distress. But because they're so used to censoring the sound of distress, which would mean that they'd have to move into a self-care mode, they wait until they've completely broken down. How do you know when you need to go to a therapist? Insomnia, can't sleep. Sleep too much, can't eat. Eat too much, don't want to be with anybody. Don't want to be alone. I mean, so that I think one of the things that I really talk to people about in the book and in other presentations is spend some time getting to know yourself, your inner self, so that you can hear the voice of your instincts, your best instincts. And your best instincts will tell you, I need help and I'm ready to ask for it.
Yeah, it's, you know, we spoke about this briefly last week and I kind of joked about it, but I was also serious. You kind of know when you say stuff like, who put this floor on the floor? You know, when you start getting mad at stuff like that, because we had a caller who talked about the fact that she was starting to snap at people for things that she shouldn't be snapping at them. And but from a clinical perspective, Dr. Chapman, and I'm so glad that you're here. You know, give me the Dr. Chapman speech about, you know, you need, you know, baby, you need to go talk to somebody.
Yes. Well, if I'm talking to someone and they tell me that they are yelling at their children about every little thing, or they snapped at a staff member at work, or they got into a road rage thing or an argument with someone in a department store, I say, my dear, you are struggling with depression and you need to go and talk to someone. Now, I agree with Marita. They're so used to being uncomfortable and feeling stressed and sad that they just kind of shove it off. But you have to encourage those women when they talk about it like that to do it. Sometimes it shows up as a sleep problem. I have a lot of people that talk about that they can only sleep 3 or 4 hours and they wake up. or that they have a lot of difficulty going to sleep. I spent a lot of time recommending teas and herbs, and sometimes if it gets really bad, they have to go to a doctor and get medication for it because the sleeping gets to be that bad. Some people walk around with just a sense of hopelessness, you know, and COVID hasn't helped. We need to talk about that for just a minute. COVID has added to people feeling a high level of stress, a lot of sadness. Some people have spent a lot of time eating because they're not going to work now. They're sitting in the house working from the computer, and the kids are home, so that's another level of stress, and sometimes the husband is home. So you have all of that going on, which can kind of add to it. So those are just, you know, signs of what we call social depression. If you have clinical depression, that's something that usually you've had probably since you were a young child. And now that you've hit adolescence, young adult, it's really kind of hit you full time. And you have all of these mood swings and stuff, so you really need to be evaluated, tested, to see whether you have bipolar or if you just have some other mood disorder. But 'cause depression gets very complicated. It can be very slight or it can be very severe. And then, you know, we have a lot of people that get to a place where they want to commit suicide. And mm-hmm. women are definitely fall into that category. And so it is important if you start to feel that these situations are reoccurring over and over and you're not handling yourself very well, let alone the people around you, you need to go and talk to a therapist. And I always say talk to a therapist and be evaluated because you want to be diagnosed so we can know exactly what's going on with you.
To that point, Dr. Chapman, one of the things that I do notice when I go to see my physician for my checkup, one of the things that I've been receiving mm-hmm. is that little clipboard with the faces, and they're starting to ask how you're feeling.
Uh-huh.
And uh-huh. I noticed that right before the pandemic.
Right, right. Because some things that people are complaining about, such as migraines, back pain, you know, headaches, those kinds of things, are really related to stress and depression. And so the doctor that's on his toes is going to, or she, it's on her toes, is going to evaluate the depression part and probably hand you a depression scale. And I know I always did that in my office. I had a depression scale. I'd have people take the depression scale, and then we would go from there. But that's a very important thing to do because sometimes what you're complaining about physically is really emotional.
Yeah, which is why a lot of times when we have heard this for years, when doctors have recommended simple exercise mm-hmm. and how so much better people feel right. after exercising regularly. And I'm not talking about going in there and pumping iron or
right.
or running right. a mini marathon 5 days a week, but
sure.
just getting out and walking even a half mile or for 15 or 20 minutes every other day.
It helps, but I want to say if you are clinically depressed and you have been clinically depressed for some time, that will help, but it will not. It won't shift it enough that it's going to make a difference. You need some more intervention.
Yeah,
you really do. And a lot of times, people play with depression, and there's a lot of shame around depression in the Black community. And you know, we really need to do a whole show on that. You know, the shame around depression and feeling, you know, not feeling good about yourself and your circumstances. And so that I think we need to, you know, give people permission to own that they're struggling and then to get help.
Yeah. Let's talk to Lisa calling from Maryland. Lisa, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, hi. Hi, Harold.
Hey, how are you?
Good, thank you. I've been on your table in the past. I wanted to say hello to Dr. Chapman. I miss you. So good to hear your voice. I used to catch your show all the time. It's so good to hear your voice.
Oh, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. And for me, You know, I take a holistic approach more so nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
For my own health and nutrition, I exercise by going walking pretty much every day, and I meditate in the Word of God. I just put goodness around me, like just a mindset of changing my mindset and recognizing, you know, my what I need for myself.
Mm-hmm.
I have been distrusting of traditional doctors. It's not to say that I don't go here and there, but it's important for me when I do go to at least find a doctor of color, because I am, you know, very distrusting of other doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, I do understand my body and what's going on, and I have an herbalist practitioner certified that I do confide mm-hmm. in and go to when I need things for myself.
That's great. It sounds like you're taking really good care of yourself, and that's important.
Yeah. One of the resources that I found when I was doing the research for the book is a great website called Therapy for Black Girls. It's founded by Dr. Joy Harden Braden down in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And she has a website where no matter where you are in the country, if you're looking for an African-American therapist, a culturally sensitive therapist, she has a list as well as a weekly newsletter. She has a podcast. And she creates a wonderful online community for women who are really interested in mental health self-care. Mm-hmm. So there is, it's called Black Therapy for Black Girls, and also for young black girls, there is Black Girls Smile, which is an organization started by a woman who, Lauren Carson, who actually suffered with mental illness issues, and they go into schools in urban areas and work with young girls between 10 and 13 around mental health, expressing their feelings, agency and independence. So there's more and more information that's out there, which is a really great thing on the internet.
That's wonderful. That's fabulous.
Lisa, thank you so much for your phone call, and take care of yourself. Briefly, Marita, if you can talk to me about masking and what that is and the impact that it has on the mental health of black women?
Well, we have to wear a lot of masks. In fact, in the book I read about when my mother was dying and I was a college student, I had to put on a mask so that I would go to American University every day. I was competent, functioning, and nobody knew that my mother was in the hospital dying. And sometimes wearing a mask, you know, can help us just sort of march through a very traumatic situation. But what happens is we get in the habit of masking a lot. Black women have to mask so many places. In the workplace, where we have to wear the mask of being perpetually cooperative, taking mm-hmm. on all the responsibilities that we're given. And sometimes even at home, if we don't have home situations where we can really be honest, we once again wear the mask of being cooperative and hiding our real feelings. But what Dr. Chapman and I are both talking about is learning how to unmask for the sake of our mental health.
Right. You have to take the mask off. You have to, and I always suggest that you look within your social network. There's probably a couple of people that you feel really safe with, so you could start unmasking with them just so you can get comfortable with the idea. And then try to see if you can, you know, do that with other significant people, like someone in your family or your partner, whatever. But to start the practice, because, you know, it's easy to get into a habit of covering up. It's much harder to take the mask off and begin to open up and let people see what's there. But so that's why I suggest that you look into your social network. There's somebody that you feel really close to, that you trust, that maybe you've known for a while, and start with them. And little by little, you can get there, and you can get there with other people as well.
In the few minutes that we have here, what would you suggest, Marita and Dr. Chapman? And I'll start with Marita. Maybe this will be the title of your next book, Beyond the Mask. It'll be, and just, you can just give me a little credit down in the corner.
He's building himself in.
I'll take a half of 1% of a royalty. Beyond the Manny Petty. That's what we'll call it. Beyond the Manny Petty. The normalization of self-care. How would you say Black women need to normalize self-care, Marita?
Well, I think those of us who are actively engaged in positive self-care and have really strong practices that have benefited us need to become more proactive in sort of being like warrior angels for our sisters who are not. Because just the fact that they haven't asked for help doesn't mean that they may not need help. In the book, The Strong Black Women, I talked to Black women who went through therapy and who then shared their experience in therapy with women who'd never done that. And those mm-hmm. women told them, thank you. Mm-hmm. I really wanted to do that, but I never talked to anybody who'd had that experience. Okay. So we have to be much more proactive. Also, there's two things. When I talked to one therapist recently, I said, if there's one thing that you could, that Black women could do that would help their mental health, she said, slow down. Slow down and learn how to just find the joy and the pleasure in everyday life. Fill your life with little tiny pockets of joy. Savor a cup of coffee. Go in the bathroom and lock it and play your music. Mm-hmm. But find little pockets of joy. Then when I talked to Dr. Wiley Carnegie over at Washington Hospital Center, who's a cardiologist, she said the one thing she would recommend Black women is to move. And what she means by move is exercise.
Yeah.
It will not solve the kind of clinical depression that Dr. Chapman was talking about, but it will help you in many, many ways. Mm-hmm. So it sounds counterproductive to move and slow down, but they actually work very effectively together.
Yeah, well, mm-hmm. that's all the time we have. Marita Golden, always good to talk to you. Thank you so
Thank
much.
You,
Congratulations Harold. On the new book. Dr. Chapman, always good to talk to you.
And I just want, let me just add one little thing.
You got 5 seconds.
Love the little girl inside you.
All right, always.
And be still so that you can listen to her.
I appreciate that. Thank you both for talking
Thank
to us.
Thank you, Harold.
That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, December 6th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.